Shark attack? Forget about it. That almost pales in comparison to this story you're about to hear. It's not for the faint-hearted, but it's an extraordinary tale of one man's fortitude. It's a story that was originally told on a public radio program called Snap Judgment and produced by Erica Lance, but I was so completely captivated by it, if that's the right word, when I heard it, that I thought it bears further exposure on this. The Sharon Hour just starting. That's with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX93.5. You're going to hear this story from the horse's mouth, so to speak, Zimbabwean Paul Templer.
I started as a safari guide when I was 22. And just a few years later, I opened my own safari company. It was awesome. We had our Land Rover and all our new equipment. It was just so freaking exciting. We'd get the clients, and then it was time to give a safety talk. And the safety talk could be quite tricky because you didn't want to scare everyone. I'd say, listen, hippos are vegetarian, so they're not seeing you as a prospective male. But you needed to make sure that they understood that out there in the wild, we were the intruders, and that there was always a chance that things could go horribly wrong. In Africa, hippos kill more people than any other animal. So it was just another one of those perfect days in Africa. And this was the inaugural trip. Everyone was seemingly having a pretty good time. They were just munching on their snacks and sipping on their drinks. Everything was going swimmingly well. And was crossing this channel when the back of my canoe just rose up off the water and then ever so gently tipped over, spilling us into the river. I've been attacked by hippos before, and usually if they hit you, it's like this thud and you're bumped out of the canoe into the river. But on this particular trip, he was this incredibly large male hippo, and the behavior was odd. It's like snapping at the water, which again is unusual hippo behavior. So that was one of those crikey moments. We weren't far from the shore, so other than scaring the heck out of a few of us, he didn't really do that much damage to us. Word had spread like wildfire that this first trip of this new safari company had ended up with us getting attacked by hippos. So when I got back from that trip, I shared a house with a few fellow guides, and they see me walking up the driveway and I'm soaking wet and what have you. They ripped me mercilessly. They were like, way to go, Templar. Never going out with you. What was kind of interesting is the three guides who were sitting on the porch that afternoon making fun of me, all three of them ended up having run-ins with that very same hippo.
You are tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. And you're listening to the story of safari guide Paul Templer, first told on the program Snap Judgment, Snap being a key element to Templer's story about this particular time guiding his clients down the Zambezi River.
The idea was the clients get into the canoe. There's three seats, one in the middle, one in the front, one in the back. And their job is just to sit back, relax, and just enjoy being paddled down the mighty Zambezi River. You're in an armada of canoes. You're going down the Zambezi River. Just ahead of you, you've got Victoria Falls, the mist coming up off it. You're surrounded by some of the most incredible flora and fauna, just the trees, the birds, the bugs, the animals. It's just beautiful out there. Loved it, truly loved it. It was mandatory when we took clients out that we were armed. So I would have a gun and I would usually have a hunting knife with me too. Because there's your ewe, the crocodiles, the hippos, there's snakes, scorpions, mosquitoes, lion, elephants, buffalo. One time we came across this guy who ran the safari camp, and we were talking about some of the huge crocs that we had seen. It turned out that they'd been having something of an issue with crocs. They'd been attacking and eating some of the local villagers, and so they'd started trying to trap some of the crocs, and there was one croc that kept on breaking their traps because it was too big. Ultimately, they managed to catch and destroy the croc. When they opened him up, there was almost the full body of one of the people who had been missing, but then there were bits and pieces of quite a few others. But what was strange, and I'm going to sound a little bit Looney Tunes here, the biggest danger for me when I was taking safari was how were my clients going to react? Animals are incredibly tuned into the environment in so many ways. If there's someone with a lot of angst on a safari, if you had a client who was really scared, it was almost like it was a magnet for mayhem. We're going to draw to us what we're afraid of. A couple of weeks later, another group's on safari, only this time the attack's a little more intense. A couple of weeks later, another safari with another guide, a little more intense. And the intensity of the attacks ratcheted up. Up to a point, you felt bulletproof. But a few months later, sitting in a boat with a friend of mine, we were talking about, hey, you know how when you've used up all your lives, and we both had got to that point where you start doubting yourself. I remember waking up on the day in question, and things just seemed, I wouldn't say heavy, but there was definitely an edge to everything. I had had weird premonitions to the extent that I'd gone out and figured out my life insurance, I'd got extra ammunition, I just knew all was not well. On that safari, the trip we were going on, there were three guides paddling. All three of them were apprentices. There was Ben and Evans. And then Mike came along. He was in a little one-man red kayak. We called it his little crocodile bait kayak. So we're just drifting down this narrow jungle-lined channel. It was dusk, and the world had that soft backlight that is just mesmerizing. We could see the top of the heads of a lot of male hippos dotted around all over the place. All it takes is an elephant to step out from the jungle and stand there with its huge ears fanning back and forth as you drift by to just make it an exceptional experience. So I remember us all just sitting there and taking a moment to soak in all that peace and tranquility when poof, there's this huge thud behind me. And I turned just in time to see Evans, the paddler sitting in the back of the canoe that was behind us, flying through the air before he splashed to the river. The boat was so high up that I could see the top of a hippo beneath it. My mind sprung straight to crisis mode. First things first, I needed to make sure that everyone got to safety. Evans, the one guide, was now in the river. Ben, get everyone to safety! There was a cluster of rocks nearby, so he and Max started doing that. Evans, hang in there, I'm coming to get you. So I'm paddling towards Evans. Evans, come! Turning the boat, trying to get it into position, leaning over to grab a hold of him, and our fingers are almost touched. It's like this made-for-Hollywood moment where I'm leaning, he's leaning, and then everything just went dark. A few very long seconds ticked by as I tried to figure out what was going on. You see, from my waist up, I wasn't dry, but I wasn't wet either, not like my legs were. And there was this incredible pressure crushing down on my lower back with my arms pinned to my sides. I can remember struggling to break free and it being like slimy, cavernous, and strangely quiet. I managed to move one hand around a little bit and I felt the bristles on a hippo's snout. I was head first up to my waist down the hippo's throat.
You're listening to safari guide Paul Templar relate his story as told on Snap Judgment and reprised here on tonight's KX935's The Sharer Now with me, Sharon James. Paul has taken his clients in a canoe down the Zambezi River. It's been upended by a hippo and Paul has found himself headfirst down the hippo's throat.
I guess I must have been uncomfortable or wedged down his throat and all. So the hippo lets me go, and I burst to the surface. I take a lungful of fresh air, come face to face with Evans, the chap I'm trying to rescue, and I'm like, we got to get out of here. His eyes are like saucers as he struggles to stay afloat. And I was just moving in for the classic lifesaver's hold when, wham, I'm hit from below. Once again, I'm up to my waist down the hippo's throat, though this time my legs are trapped, my hands are free. One of the clients watching said it was like watching a vicious dog trying to rip apart a rag doll. He would throw me up into the air, and I'd do this crazy sort of half twist, and then he would catch me and bite down. And each time he bit down, it was so hard, I thought for sure he's going to chop me in half. When he would go underwater, I'd hold my breath. When we're on the surface, I'd suck in air. And all the while, I'd hold on to these tusks that bore through me just so that my flesh didn't tear so much when he shook me about. But when I did that and I sucked in air, there was the smell of rotten eggs. The hippo was thrashing me about, and I was desperately trying to get to my revolver, only I couldn't get a hold of the gun. Then things got really quite surreal. The hippo just went and dove for deep water, and everything just went still. So I'm pinned inside his mouth, and I remember lying at the bottom. We were probably in about 6 feet of water. And I'm looking up, and all I can see are the different hues of green and yellow, and I can see the sunlight shimmering on the water surface. And I just remember thinking, like, huh, I wonder who can hold their breath the longest. And I'm not sure how long we stayed there, but I can tell you that time passes very slowly when you're lying there in the jaws of a submerged hippo. After what seemed like an eternity, the hippo sprang towards the surface and flung me away yet again. This time when I broke surface and looked up, I saw the front of Mac's little red crocodile bait kayak. In just one of the most incredible demonstrations of bravery, Mac had paddled his kayak in and was trying to get me to safety. Held on for dear life as the hippo thrashed on me, thrashed on the boat, thrashed on Mac. And somehow, miracle of miracles, he managed to get us to this pile of rocks. And relative safety, the hippo couldn't get up onto the rocks. I remember getting to the rocks and looking across and counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All the clients were there. I was like, good. I remember trying to reassure them, all right, folks, you need to calm down. Everything's going to be okay. And them just looking at me. None of them could believe that I was still alive. I remember saying to Mac, where's Evans? And Mac just looking me square in the eye and going, he's gone, mate. He's gone. But again, my mind was in survival mode, and it was, okay, we need to do X, Y, and Z. Okay, first aid kit, gun, radio, all gone. We've got a guy missing. I'm a hot mess. We've got 6 clients sitting on rocks in the middle of the crocodile-infested Zambezi River. And by the time anyone missed us and had mobilized a search and rescue team, it would be dark, and their chances of finding us would be pretty slim. So my plan was, okay, load me into one of the canoes. Mac, you're going to stay here with the clients. Ben, you're going to paddle me. We're going to follow the current, and we can get to our extraction point and call in a rescue team. As I'm speaking, along with my words, blood starts bubbling out of my mouth. So Mac kind of half rolled me over, and he's like, oh, crikey. He could see basically part of my lung through a gaping hole in my back where a tusk had gone through. So he took the plastic cover from a tray of snacks, and he used that to seal the wound. It was incredible. He stopped my lung from collapsing and me from dying right there on the spot. He tore up his brand new jungle green safari shirt into thin strips, and he would stem the bleeding in some areas and tie off other areas. My one arm was so badly trashed. From the elbow up, it had been crushed to a pulp. And from the elbow down, the bone had been broken in so many places, and there was very little skin left on it. I think the technical term is degloved. But Mac figured out, okay, let's roll down your sleeve, button it up, and see if we can keep the arm attached. I remember getting loaded into the canoe, and he just eased the canoe out into the current. I'm lying in the canoe, and it's filling with a combination of my blood and more water, and the pain was just coming in waves. this is when death kind of started showing up. This hippo that's attacked us is toying with us. It's coming and bumping up against the canoe and making its little calls nearby. Each time it hits our boat, I get more and more terrified. And I'm saying to Ben, I can't do this again, Ben. And I want him to paddle faster. It feels like he's paddling in slow motion. And then I remember things just going really calm. This was a deeper, a more profound, a more surreal experience. It, dare I say, it was a spiritual experience. There came this moment where I realized I had a choice. Do I shut my eyes and drift off and call it a day? Or do I fight my way through this and try to stick around? And it's not that I could see my life flashing before my eyes, but I just had the sense that there was more still to be done. I remember going, no, I'm going to stick around.
You know, that happens. You make these quick decisions about how you're going to keep yourself sane and going at times like these. As you'll hear when I relate my own rather crazy accident in the belly of a beast. I'm Sharon James. This is the Sharon Hour on KX935. The story you're listening to was first told on Snap Judgment. It's safari guide Paul Templer's story about being engorged, if not entirely eaten, by a hippo on the Zambezi River. He's been halfway down the hippo's throat, then tossed in the air and back.
We made it to the shore, and it turned out there was a medical air rescue team practicing less than 5 minutes away from me. They came beetling along thinking that it was part of a practice. And they took me into the hospital in the ambulance. I finally get to the hospital. It's 8 hours later. And they put me on this operating table. Big bright lights. I can't see anyone, but I can hear them. They're like talking about how my arms are barely still attached, how I'm going to lose limbs. Turns out I had 38 major bite wounds. I had a tusk go through my foot. The hippo tusk has gone through both my shoulders and separated them. My spine was open. My head was open. My face, it was not looking pretty. The doc comes up, and he told me the story later on. When he came in and he looked at all my injuries, the surgery that made sense was take off both of my arms and the bottom of one of my legs. That was probably going to have the best chance of me surviving. I looked him in the eye. And I said to him, Doc, I know that you're going to do what you got to do, but why do you say you take the minimalist approach? Post-surgery, I can remember laying there and my eyes opening and being kind of confused as to where I was. And I remember steeling myself and looking for my left hand because I knew that had been the side that had been hit the hardest. And I looked across and there was nothing there. There was no elbow. There was no forearm. There was no hand. There was no moving fingers, even though I could feel them. It was all gone. And there was a lot of despair. It was just, was nauseating. And so I kept my eyes wide and I remember saying a prayer. And then I looked and could see the fingers on my right hand and I moved them. I'm incredibly relieved. There's this like big cage over my legs and not a lot of movement coming from down there. I didn't want to look, but at the same time, I needed to know what was left of me. The nurse who was in control, it was kind of like she could read my mind. So she went and with great aplomb, kind of like a magician, she just whipped back the sheet. And there, at the bottom of each leg was 2 feet. And granted, the 1 foot was really mangled, but all of my toes were still attached. Evans, the chap who I was trying to save, they found his body 3 days after the attack. There wasn't a scratch on him. He drowned. I felt guilty because Evans, my guide, his safety and well-being had been my responsibility, and now he was dead. It was easy for me to blame the hippo. But as time went by, I got stronger, and I couldn't shake Dr. Nube's words. That's happened. I get to choose what happens next. I think the hippo almost became almost became a talisman.
With colors matching saddened eyes has lost its magic touch. People from a distant hill have crossed an ever-stretching sea of sand. Artificial flowers cannot die, for life within them is illusion. Talisman, talisman, grace my hand. Talisman, grace my hand. Figures made of pedigrees control the non-existent soul of John Smith. Walk the creature, let it run, but slacken not the rope to which it's bound. Ships in bottles cannot sail, and neither can a tombstone kill a feather. Talisman, talisman, grace my hand. Talisman, grace my hand. Kings are nothing more without the glory and the wealth behind their thinking. Let me feel the choice of seeing dawn or setting sun before I die. Myriads of painted faces rush behind the eye of the uncertain. Talisman, talisman, grace my hand. Talisman, grace my hand.
Talisman in the case of Paul Templer, safari guide on the Zambezi River, is an odd one, being that it was a particularly determined hippo who had Templer halfway down its throat. Templer's story was first told on the program Snap Judgment. It has been regurgitated, as it were, here on KX935's The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James.
Interesting part of the story. They never could find that hippo again. Gone, 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 gone. they spent days, weeks looking for him. Disappeared. Now, the river I'd been attacked on had never been canoed from source to sea. A lot of people had tried it, but to date, no one had succeeded. So I put together a team, and I found someone who could build me a kayak paddle that I could strap onto one arm so I could paddle a kayak again. And about 2 years after my run-in with the hippo, set off leading what I hoped was going to be the first full descent of the Zambezi River. It was closing a loop. And about halfway down, we get to the point where the attack had happened, when out of the water comes this hippo, jaws agape, tearing straight at me, bites down in the water right next to me. I couldn't believe that this had happened again. And just saying, it was an abnormally large male hippo who looked surprisingly like the one who had attacked me 2 years earlier. He showed his teeth and he bit down on the water, but he did nothing more. He got the last word. No hippos have been seen in that area since.
That was an amazing story, right, about that Zimbabwean adventurer. Not only the accident, but that he would go back and face his demons. Even that particular non-metaphorical one in the form of a hippopotamus. You're listening to The Sharon Hour on Lagunas KX 935. I'm Sharon James, and I have my own accident. Not quite as dire, but also in the jaws of a beast. A non-animal one. Again, I'm taking a risk here that this is more interesting than it is off-putting. It too involves my arm, but this beast was a tractor. It happened a while back. My husband and I were living in New York. We had bought this beautiful piece of land, a 22-acre hilltop, just 2 hours outside New York City. in the middle of dairy fields. We bought it for $35,000 on our credit card extensions. And then we built a house on top of the hill. I wanted it to be in the middle of the hill, nestled in trees. But my husband, being a man, wanted to be on top of the hill. And of course, the views were beautiful. All we could see were dairy farms all around us. And for those of you who know a little bit of my history, there were 12 when we first bought the land, and only 2 left by the time we built on it. And it was the reason why we started a dairy with our dairy farmer neighbours. It was called Ronnybrook Farm Dairy. We decided to sell our own milk in glass bottles, unhomogenised, so the cream rose to the top in an old-fashioned way. And though we've since sold out to the farmer's brother, it remains an ongoing and successful enterprise that's a proud part of our history. Anyway, that's a whole other story. The story that involves the tractor and my arm, which, as you've probably already surmised, got literally entangled, involves us putting in fencing around our eventual house so that we could actually let the rest of the property be either grazeland for the farmer or hay or corn or whatever he wanted to plant there. The top was our own private personal space. So we were putting in fencing, and what this involved was attaching a post hole digger, a large auger that looks like a mammothly thick screwdriver, to the engine of the tractor by means of a PTO, a power takeoff. This power takeoff is a long tube that revolves at around 300 plus RPM and in turn drills the post hole digger into the ground, provides the momentum for drilling the post hole digger into the ground. That's my non-technical description of it. And this PTO, power takeoff, has these little pins sticking up from it. And we were on the last post hole, of course. How we were working it was I would be revving the tractor engine and my husband would be pressing down on the top of this post hole digger to keep it steady. And then we would, when one of us tired, switch positions and I would come around the tractor so that he would then climb up into the driver's seat and rev the engine, and I would be weighing down on the post hole digger to keep it steady. It was as we were switching places that I got too near the power takeoff, and one of those pins grabbed the fabric of the jacket I was wearing and hauled my arm in, wrapping it 3.5 times around the power takeoff tube. Luckily, it was an old tractor, and my arm choked the tractor and stalled it. But there it was, and there I was, engorged by the machine. And of course, all sorts of things flashed through my mind. And though I didn't think I was about to die, I did think I was about to lose my arm, and a certain resignation to my fate came over me. My first thought was, I'm 40 years old, I've had a good life with full use of my arm, and if it has to continue without that use, I can surely make accommodation.
Welcome to the show, but I'm watching you, and all of hell is with me too, helping me make my life true. Oh, and there is a lie that works for everyone, everyone. A lie that opens up your heart so I can get me some more of your free will. I'm winding you, give me the control. That's why I'm telling you, selling you anything, everything, appealing to your human way of being. And I use it all against you just to keep your eyes from seeing past the life you're living, past the moment. the truth. But I'll say that millions of years ago an accident exploded, and you're the result of this cosmic unknown with no real purpose, created for no real intent. The reason for your living is just coincidence. So all that remains is what you can paint. Whatever meaning you attach to your days, you decide. But I help you recognize the important things in life. Introducing money, that's the root of all evil, they say so. Attach your self-worth to the salary you're paid. Be a slave to your property, your jewelry, your cars and things. Advertise that lie up on the TV so you aren't that bling. Selling bit by bit the little pieces of your soul. Climbing up the ladder of economic control. Oh, the greed of man makes it so easy to pervert the father's plan. Or I'll tell you that ways to get them. Keep you so confused that you stay back to your sin. Tell you there are many ways to the same God. Keep you distracted with your methods so your heart stays hard. I'll make you think you've got spirituality, but it's really just emotional alchemy. All the vanity of self-idolatry. I never let you see that it breeds hedonism.
How we can delude ourselves, particularly in times of trauma. I'm Sharon James. This is the Sharon Hour on KX935. And I'm currently telling you about a bad accident I was in, which involved a tractor. You know, the body has systems to protect us when something incredibly emotional happens to us, and from feeling unbearable pain when something traumatic physically happens to us. All of that gets sort of retarded to help us through the moment. And in the moment when the power takeoff on the tractor hauled my arm in and wrapped my arm around it 3.5 times, trapping it, all these thoughts, imaginary as well as real, popped into my head. As I've expressed, the main one being, I'm 40. If I lose my arm, it won't be the end of the world. But here's the extraordinary thing when it comes to the brain and trauma. You know, facts are facts, and that may need reiterating in this current day and age, but in terms of the facts of this accident I'm telling you about, they are manifest in the physical scars I have to this day. But truth is something more illusory, especially the absolute truth of any given circumstance, because the memory will play certain tricks on you. For instance, the actual seminal parts of what happened this Sunday, putting in post holes, are factual, but the sequence of events was remembered slightly differently by my husband than by me. The differences aren't particularly notable, but it's just I may be lost a tiny portion of a scene, and my husband maybe added a tiny portion of a scene and one of us got it a little bit wrong. Didn't change anything in the course of events, didn't noticeably affect the trauma of it in any way. I mean, when I heard that story about the guy going back to the hippo, I thought, how could he? But our nightmares tend to be made up of much more mundane stuff than the worst traumatic things that ever happened to us, relived. I mean, maybe not in every case, I should qualify. But I don't shiver when I go near a tractor any more than this man did when he went on a canoe on that same river with the risk of meeting that same hippopotamus. I apply the trauma in other ways. I am cognizant of being clumsy around equipment. I'm a little more circumspect now. For instance, I did do machine Pilates, but I stopped thinking I could actually get entangled. Anyway, that was one of the mental takeaways. The other really interesting one was my brain wrongly assumed that I was actually wrapped around the auger, the posthole digger that's like a giant screwdriver. Because when your bones break, as mine had, they'd all snapped in two, it feels like you're impaled. So I thought I was impaled on this vertical giant screwdriver-shaped posthole digger, whereas in fact my arm was wrapped around this sleek, round power takeoff rod that attached the posthole digger to the tractor. And I thought that if I fainted, I would literally pull my arm out of its socket and that would be the end of it. So I was trying to make sure I didn't faint. So my prime concern was to not look at what was going on and thereby, because I am squeamish, not faint. And it worked. I didn't faint. My husband, equally squeamish, thank God didn't faint either, and went straight into fix-it mode, even had the presence of mind to call the local hospital to make sure an orthopedic surgeon was on call on a Sunday, and actually discovered that no, there wasn't one available, which meant we didn't waste even more time by going to that hospital, which was south of us in Connecticut, but instead we went to one that was quite a bit further north of us, where, incidentally, the nurse recognized my husband, who'd recently been on a popular TV soap and was attempting to flirt with him while I was lying there saying, okay, enough of this forced good humor already, just get me out of here. Jab something in me that will take me away from this world.
Just for now. Just for now. Will somebody make us shut up about it? Can we settle down, please? Stand up over here. Leave all our hopelessness aside. Just
truly all I could think of lying there on that gurney. You're listening to The Sharer Now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's one and only KX93.5. Tonight, telling you about ending up in the jaws of a beast. My particular beast was our tractor when we were putting in fence posts, of course the very last one, around our country house upstate New York. My husband and I were taking turns between sitting up in the driver's seat of the tractor and revving the engine and standing over the auger, the posthole digger, that was drilling a hole into the ground. The two are connected by what's called a power takeoff. This round, smooth tube, which has the occasional little pins sticking up from it, for some reason that I don't quite know. And as I was climbing down from the driver's seat, moving toward the auger, I got a little too close. The pin grabbed my jacket and hauled my arm around it 3.5 times, ultimately, thank God, choking the tractor because it was an old tractor. Luckily, I was wearing a jacket. It was winter, so the jacket acted as a tourniquet so that I didn't bleed to death there and then. But I still needed to be extricated from the machine, and that took some professional help. As I've mentioned, I didn't dare faint because in my mind, I wasn't wrapped around this smooth pole. I was stuck on this huge screwdriver-type vertical post-hole digger. Because when your bones are snapped, and all three bones in my arm had snapped apart, it feels like you're impaled, like there's something sharp going into you. And even though there wasn't anything sharp going into me, my raveled arm felt that way. And I thought that if I fainted, I would literally rip my arm out of its socket, and that would be that. So I was very conscious about not looking at the damage so that I wouldn't faint. My husband was doubly squeamish, so it was incredible that he kept his head. Went into efficient mode, thought to call ahead to the local hospital to make sure there was an orthopedist on call, which there actually wasn't. Of course, it was a Sunday, because Sunday is when you do these things. But the situation was further complicated by the fact that we were literally on the boundary between two counties, Dutchess County in New York and Columbia County. That complicated matters in terms of the ambulance that would be needed to come to my rescue, take me off to hospital. At the hospital that was nearest to us, there was not an orthopedic surgeon on, so that meant going to the further away hospital in the other county. The ambulance arrived, paramedics got out, looked at the situation where they needed to unravel me, unwind my arm that had been wound around this pole 3.5 times, and I overheard one of them whisper to the other, "No, it'll have to go." And I thought, "Huh?" And I said, "You mean my arm?" "Oh, no, no," he said, "the glove." I had this rather beautiful ski glove, red and white down, that they were trying to save, but obviously had to cut off so they could get to my hand so they could start unraveling my arm. We were able to have a bit of a laugh about that. But I wasn't in much form for laughter, as you can imagine, since it had taken them nearly 3/4 of an hour to get there by the time they sorted out which county ambulance should be in charge. It took them another 3/4 of an hour to unravel me, which they managed to do successfully, and then they loaded me into the ambulance. One of them was kind enough to sit down on the bed next to me and keep my arm steady against the mattress when the ambulance made its turns, because, as I said, the bones were snapped in two, and when we made a turn, the separate parts would go off in different directions without him doing that. They did a little bit, but he was magnificent. Further magnificent, because when he called in the accident, he said, "I have a young woman, mid-30s, coming in." And in fact, I was 40. So I appreciated that. I was in good other hands. The hospital that I was taken to was in Great Barrington, New York, which is both a farming and a skiing community. So the orthopedist on call had seen a lot of broken bones of all shapes and colours. And after a 4.5 hour operation, he managed to wrap it back together. My husband, rather ungallantly, but with the best intentions, had said to him, "Listen, if this is beyond your capabilities, let me know. I'll have her helicoptered to wherever she needs to be helicoptered." Well, he said, "You won't, because she wouldn't make it. We need to operate right away. And yes, I can manage." And when in fact we did go to the fancy New York City surgeon for the follow-up post-surgery checkups and attention, he said, "This guy basically saved your arm and did a great job." And there was a lot of rehabilitation For just under a year, my right arm was in a cast. I had pulleys for all my fingers because there was severe nerve damage and my fingers weren't working properly. I had to do intensive therapy to get my wrist working properly again. In that interim period, I had to do everything with my left hand. My husband actually flossed my teeth for me, which was helpful, but I had to write with my left hand. This was pre-computers, so all my files from that date, I could tell what was going on that year because it was in almost unintelligible handwriting. I've since learned via Michael Lavery, with whom I did one of my KX935's The Share in Our shows a few weeks ago, that it's a really good idea actually to try to teach yourself to be ambidextrous, more for brain function than for the accidents you're going to have with your right arm, but serves those occasions too. During that period where my arm was in a cast with pulleys, we'd scheduled a trip home to my parents in England. Of course, I had not told them about the accident because they would have worried needlessly from afar. But you can imagine my mother's face when I got off the plane. A lot of explaining was necessary. It all turned out fine. I still do have nerve damage, but nerves correct themselves, albeit at an incredibly slow rate of about a quarter of an inch a year. So my right hand, when I put it in a pocket or something, feels a little bit tingly, like when you hit your funny bone. Other than that, and the fact that I stretched my wrist too far back during physical therapy, so it actually goes 90 degrees back, but only 45 degrees forward, and the fact that my right arm has mammoth scars from the operations. They had to put a brace on the littlest bone, but they put pins through the bigger bones that they later removed. So I guess I didn't ping through airport security. Other than that, all functions well. I play tennis right-handed. I do everything that anyone else can do, and am truly grateful that my story turned out as well as it did. Just a final coda. When we went for the very last consultation at the New York City surgeon, because we lived in New York City, just for him to sign off and say everything looks good, that was when my husband fainted. All that time, all that year between, he had held it in. I guess, as I mentioned earlier, what happens with a trauma is when you can afford to react appropriately, you do. When you can't, you don't. The body and mind makes accommodation, another thing to be thankful for. Well, if I haven't grossed you out and I still have your attention here on KX935's The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, I have one more little thing to add since this show is running a tiny bit short and I'm in personal mode. I don't get political on this show very often, but I did want to address a little bit of the furore going on in town about Peter Blake's quite vocal opposition to certain more establishment former members of the local council. So I'm going to use these last few minutes to present my own bit of commentary about it. I'd like to preface this by saying I admire Peter Blake for being forthright, and there's a lot that he says that I don't disagree with, but I wish he didn't bring ageism into the picture. I'm not one of those PC, PC, PC people. However, I do want to make one point as a member of the aging population, and that is to say that progress isn't always linear, that being progressive isn't being contemporary. You only have to look at the situation in the world today to realize all the regressive positions that are being taken or considered, including the loss of many civil rights that were established decades ago, all this being done in the name of progress. So take a step back from the aging thing. Realize there are certain things once lost that will never be regained, and that applies to open lands. Because when it comes to laws, those things can be changed. Changed progressively, get changed regressively. That money isn't the only currency in the world. Age does teach you that. There are elements of our society that need to be retained, simply because they're good for our soul. In any event, I wish all candidates good luck. I imagine at heart they have what they think is best for our community. Speaking of which, do become a member of this radio station, KX935. We try to provide more than just entertainment. We have emergency alerts on air that can on occasion be more reliable than Alert OC or Nixie, because sometimes your phone reception may fail you where our airwaves won't locally. So those emergency alerts can be helpful. We also have a variety of shows that are pure joy and entertainment and music. Most of them podcast on iTunes and on our own dedicated website, kx935.com. For my own, if you want to hear this or any other of my shows again, go to kx935.com/shows/the-sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. And do come back for more stories, interviews, riffs on a variety of topics. Meantime, have a great week and take care of yourselves. Guard yourself against the jaws of any of those beasts you may encounter, whether animal, vegetable, or mineral. And watch yourself. Be careful so you can enjoy the brand new season coming up.
Happiness.